Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friends Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by John Andrus. John, how are you doing this fine Friday afternoon?
Oh, it's spring in Johannesburg, springtime, and I'm doing very well and very pleased to be back on the Friday edition of the show with our live audience. So, thanks for inviting me back, Nick.
Always a pleasure to have you. But of course, as your employer, I'm contractually obligated to say that. But regardless,
It's in the contract. Yes, I know.
yes. Let's get into the news of today. And the first thing we're going to be talking, well, today we're going to be talking a lot about sort of various opinion pieces and from various writers. The first thing we're going to start off with is a column written by Justice Malala. And it's titled "Beware the End of the ANC, Hope is Nigh." It starts off saying, "If you ever suffered under the delusion that the ANC is coming to save you, I've got news. The Jacob Zuma forces of the 2010s who stayed in the ANC after he was ousted in 2018 are back. They are organizing for a takeover of the party by the end of 2027, if not much sooner." He goes on to say, "When the Zuma administration's corruption became too much to bear, most South Africans turned to the, quote, good people in the ANC to get rid of its leader. There were enough of them to ensure that he lost at the 2017 elective conference and President Cyril Ramaphosa was installed as leader. Ramaphosa has failed to turn things around. He's losing control of his party and the country. Unemployment, business closures, corruption, government incompetence hog the headlines." He goes on to say that there's this big fight looming for the ANC's next elective conference. The Zumaites and various other cliques will be arrayed against Ramaphosa, intent on ousting him before the ANC faces further humiliation in 2029. Apparently, there's been a report done by the ANC-aligned institute, the Mapungubwe Institute, which basically said, I think that the ANC will only keep majorities in 2029 in Limpopo and the Eastern Cape on the current trajectory. And Justice Malala describes this as the looting window closing in 2029. Ramaphosa's continued incumbency, weak as it is a small obstacle to that looting. His presence at the top prevents an alliance with MK, but as soon as he goes, the ANC will fall straight into an alliance with Zuma's party with the attendant corruption, populism, and kleptocracy. The ANC is not coming to save anyone. South Africa and the opposition parties better wake up." So why are we talking about this? Well, I think it is something we haven't quite discussed enough. We've discussed a lot this week, and I would love your input on this, maybe to start off with, that the ANC does suddenly seem to be hitting a real stretch of crisis. We're seeing in polling that their popular support seems to be collapsing. I mean, we talked about that leak of DA polling, which suggests the ANC is like at around in the 20s in Johannesburg. And someone, Thuli House, said that the ANC had recently polled as low as 12% in Joburg, which is just absolutely devastating number. I mean, we don't know if that's true, but that's just, what an anonymous source told the media. We've got all these sort of scandals that just keep coming out. The ANC can't seem to get a single good headline at all in the media. And they're being shown up in the GNU. And despite getting their way in the GNU, controlling it, they seem to be getting the blame for everything going wrong. They're getting all the sort of negatives of the GNU also piled on them. So firstly, John, your thoughts on this story of the ANC being in collapse. What do you make of it?
Yeah, so I think we're experiencing absolutely fascinating social processes unfolding right before our eyes. Back in April, I wrote a piece for the Daily Friend called "The ANC is Facing Electoral Oblivion," and at that time, that still seemed like a bit remote. And I was thinking on timelines of many years, up to a decade or so. But these processes are really accelerating at the moment. And what's very notable for me is that it's not just the structural factors that are pointing the wrong way for the ANC, like funding, for example, like international relations, like financial troubles for the organization itself. But there's something much more dangerous happening right at the moment, which is that the foundation of ANC strength has not been its ability to deliver. Right, so it's not been a successful party because it's been great at governance. The foundation of its success has been its legitimacy, its people believing in the ANC, believing that it had a moral right to lead, that it had the right to exercise authority, that it was in line with the aspirations of South Africans. And this legitimacy was the source of its strength. And this thing is now the very thing, the very sort of supporting strut that's being kicked away. The legitimacy is being undermined, questioned, weakened. It's eroding before our very eyes. And the signs you read to see that are what commentators are seeing in the media and the ANC itself. So when you read the ANC annual report, the 2024 annual report, it mentions the word crisis 20 times. And it mentions the existential crisis of the ANC as the topic. So they know that they're in trouble. Then you get Senzo Mthunu, the suspended police minister and also NEC member of the ANC, saying that the ANC is facing collapse. And he gets rebuked by Luthuli House, and they say, no, we're going to have a disciplinary with him because how dare he say such a thing. But of course, what he's saying is what's in the annual report. That's in the official statements of the ANC. It is also what everybody's thinking. And so as the legitimacy erodes, the strength of the party erodes, society's belief in the ANC disappears, and so does the ANC's belief in itself. And as that goes away, there's nothing holding up the party. There are no accomplishments to point to. There are no core principles or values that it can point to. It is a hollow shell without achievements. And that is, it's an existential threat. And I think like the risk of sudden collapse is based on this observation, that it's the legitimacy that's going away. And when that goes and you've got nothing else to hold on to, then you are, you're destined to fail and to fall. There's nothing you can do about it at that stage. Nick.
So that raises the question. This is what I wanted to get onto. What happens next? Okay, let's say that Ramaphosa and his faction or his candidates or whoever's close to him, whoever wants to basically keep things going the way they are, loses control of the ANC in 2027. And let's say the sort of Zumaites, or I don't know what to call them, but that crowd gets in and they immediately make an alliance with MK. Isn't this a sort of complete nightmare scenario? The country's economy will go into shock. It'll be like just as we had the sugar high with the formation of the GNU, the DA will have, I don't know what to call it, the sort of opposite of a sugar high, sugar crash. When MK forms an alliance with the ANC, they'll be as bad as ANC policy has been. Maybe it'll get worse. Maybe they'll say, oh, now we're going to nationalize the banks or nationalize all the land or something like that. People fear for the democratic legitimacy of our elections. Would an MK EFF ANC government even allow sort of free elections to proceed in the country? Doesn't this mean that we're doomed, I guess, is now to be clear, this is not the view I have, but it is a criticism worth responding to. What do you make of that? I mean, regardless of whether the ANC support collapses or not, the ANC is still going to be the largest party in Parliament until 2029, unless Parliament gets dissolved, which I do think is extremely unlikely, just because of the math required in terms of votes to get that. Inside Parliament itself. What's your take on all that?
We're entering a period of high flux, which makes it really hard to see which way things will play out. But the way I look at it is like this. I do think the chances of MK rejoining the ANC are rising very rapidly at the moment, because the ANC thinks that this is sort of the only way that it can salvage itself. And for MK, it's an obvious play. So how do you break out of the KwaZulu-Natal ghetto? Well, you've got to take over the rest of the ANC to have a foothold in the rest of the country and run the entire country. But it is effectively a band of mutineers who are fighting with each other, boarding a sinking ship. So it's not a great prospect, it doesn't really have long-term survival written all over it. And in that sense, I'm sanguine about what's coming. My concern is very concentrated in a single point. I think there's only a single point that really matters. And that is the question of whether democracy survives until 2029 and the next elections or not. If it does, so if in 2029 we have free elections like we've had the past 30 years, and voters are able to express what they want and what their priorities are, then what we're going to get is some sort of moderate dominated coalition, I think, because most voters are moderate, and I think they're going to mostly vote for something moderate, which probably will be something like the DA or some of the newer kind of centrist parties, which are now in the GNU. But if the MK party, together with the radical parts of the ANC, that sinking ship, maybe with some elements of the EFF, band together and decide, well, we can't really take the risk of having people decide whether we stay in government or not. That's a very dangerous thing to do. We'd better restrict freedom of expression. We'd better restrict the ability of opposition parties to operate. We'd better make sure that the IEC is under our control and that we determine who does the counting in the elections. Then I think all bets are off. And then we are facing that scenario where this band of people, kleptocrats, opportunists, ideologues, all mixed together, are able to cement their hold on power, despite what people want, what they value, or what they prioritize. And that's the big risk at the moment. So it's a very punctual risk. If you're looking into analyzing South Africa's future, that's the one thing you've got to look out for. Will we still have free elections in 2029? If we do, I think we're going to be okay. If we don't, we'll be in trouble.
So on that point, let's perhaps speculate wildly what about whether we will. There's definitely, I think, some reasons to think that we won't, in terms of the fact that, you know, you look at a group like MK, who definitely, I think, have, or let's put it this way, they've been accused of having deep ties to construction mafias. We know that there's sort of influence of these kind of more criminal gangs throughout the ruling party, throughout MK, and it's not a huge leap to go from organizations like that to something that is the sort of scaffolding of autocracy.
Yeah.
At the same time, I think that it's very difficult to establish an autocracy when you're part of a group that's been losing legitimacy for a long time.
Yeah.
It helps to have some sort of popular will behind you. And we're bringing Zuma again is not like going to be the thing that makes people excited that rally behind you. I think, in fact, it's going to do the opposite. It's going to unite people against a sort of ANC MK government. Also, I don't think, I think you need means of repression. As we know from our many stories on the show, the police are not really up to the task of sort of total national repression. They can, I'm sure, randomly beat people up every now and again and tear gas crowds and things. But generally speaking, I don't think we have the makings of a police state. Our army is also not in a particularly good state. I mean, they're not going to have the petrol to drive the trucks to the protest to go shoot at people. And South Africans have an extremely long history of riots and civil disobedience and just generally being a bit sort of ungovernable. So I don't know, John, I get the feeling that even if there is an attempt to sort of end democracy in the country, that's really not going to work well for whoever tries it. But what do you think? Am I being too optimistic?
No, I share your view. I think taking over control over the country takes coordination. So you need various people to work together to organize this and to make it work, make it stick. And that's going to be tough because we know that there's factions inside MK who can't stand each other, who as soon as they can are going to start fighting each other. And that's not going to change if they go together with the ANC. Then it'll be more factions fighting each other. So coordinating the takeover is going to be difficult if these people work together. I think also that South Africa has, as a protective factor, the existence of multiple centers of power. So it's not like, if you are MK/ANC in an alliance, you have managed to coordinate sufficiently to go out and take over the country. There's not a single place you can take over that will give you power, right? So you can maybe take control of the union buildings, but not all of the police will follow you. The private security industry is multiple times larger than the police. The farmers are going to fight you. The banks are not going to work with you, and it's just going to be a huge big mess. It will be very hard to make it stick.
Right.
And
You
that is
know,
kind of a protection that we've got.
the fact that so much of our economy is based on finance, I think, also marks against this. I think it's quite difficult to sort of, you know, if a huge chunk of your economy is based on the fact that you're a relatively stable, relatively developed place that has, you know, better than the rest of Africa institutions when it comes to sort of like courts and that kind of thing, and suddenly you have like some undemocratic force taking over, you're just going to be starved of resources very quickly. You would need significant sort of foreign support. And I mean, that's the other question. Do you think China, Russia, Iran, I don't know, Mozambique, the Zimbabwe government, someone would be willing to support an undemocratic state in South Africa? Because I think that's the only way it could happen, is with some sort of significant foreign investment in such a thing. What do you make of that?
Yeah, that I don't know. I guess it would depend on how compelling the pitch is that this grouping makes to foreign powers. And it may be that they say, look, you know, we'll give you access to X, whatever X is, critical minerals, ports, manpower, something like that, in exchange for you giving us official recognition and mostly leaving us alone to do the things that we're doing. But again, you know, it takes coordination and planning. So it's going to be quite tricky. I think that the some of the co one of the comments being made by one of our viewers here, that ANC survival for the time being is DA and the few small middle parties. I think that's true for sort of the Ramaphosa part of the ANC. But the ANC, I think, is quite divided. There are parts of it that recognize that the DA is the path to salvation for the time being. You'd better keep them on board. They're sort of what are keeping you afloat. But there are other parties of the ANC that sooner rather than later would like to have the DA out, and you know, fall into bed with MK and EFF. And all of this is going, you know, this is happening right now, but it's happening in the run-up to the local government elections. It's happening while this national dialogue is happening. It's happening while we're heading to the national, what's it called, the National General Convention? No, Council, the NGC meeting of the ANC. So end of this year, 4,000 members are going to join together and discuss progress and failures of the ANC. So I mean, we're heading for volatile times, and the ANC is in the middle of it. Doesn't really have a plan to get through it, I think.
I think what's going to be quite important for the sort of momentum and political psychology of all of this is going to be what happens in the next local government election. You know, if you see a party like the DA becoming really strong and MK sort of underperforms and the ANC doesn't do so good and the EFF doesn't do so good, if that sort of bloc has a bad local government election, I think that's going to hurt their opportunities to sort of consolidate power, because then you're kind of like, oh no, we just had this, you know, we lost all these councillors. There's a lot of people in politics who are opportunists. And, you know, I think I think the quote is attributed to Osama bin Laden, but I'm not sure that there's this theory of the strong horse, that a lot of people in politics will back what they feel is a strong horse. And the ANC has benefited from that, as you kind of described. I think it's another way of talking about that legitimacy thing. But, you know, if that crowd looks like the weak horse, it's going to be very hard to sort of consolidate power after that. I don't know. What's your take on that?
Yeah, and I think you asked at the outset, you know, what does the runway look like to 2029 if the ANC continues to weaken? I think the local government elections will be really key in that. If the ANC loses control of Gauteng, like the three metros, if it loses control of many municipalities in KwaZulu-Natal, as well as, of course, sort of getting crushed in the Western Cape as it has been doing for over a decade, it loses a lot of its sort of basis of patronage, of being able to dispense jobs for pals and dispense tenders to friends, etc., etc. So that's going to be it's going to weaken it quite dramatically. So the national government will maybe continue as it is. The ANC will still have its 40% of seats in the National Assembly, continue working with the DA, but it will be dramatically weakened by having all these other structures kicked out from under it.
For what it's worth, my view on this is that the road to 2029 is definitely going to be rocky, and there are probably going to be some very scary moments on it. But I reckon that the forces are aligning in such a way now that we will probably come out okay on the other side. It won't be as good as anyone hopes, but I think it'll be okay. You know, that's not a view based off of sort of wishing. I think that's what the data and the analysis is telling us. And the key to it is the fact that, as you said, John, you know, our surveys again and again show that the majority of South Africans are actually kind of pretty moderate, don't like chaos that much, and are just tired of all the dysfunction.
Yeah. Amen to that.
Indeed. Okay, let's move on to our next story. This is part of the sort of my phone is ringing. Yeah, so my camera is malfunctioning. But let me just introduce this story, and then I will switch my camera back on.
I'm going to introduce your caller.
I wish. The city of Cape Town has said that it is now making, I guess, sort of serious efforts to begin trying to devolve police powers. The idea here is this is something that, you know, the DA has pushed for a long time. It's one of the things they hope to get out of joining the GNU, although it doesn't really seem to be happening. But there was a vote in the city council of Cape Town where they said they're going to empower the city manager to pursue the process of devolving police powers under the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act. They want national government to grant the city crime intelligence functions, forensic firearm testing capabilities, and various other things. This proposal went through the Safety and Security Portfolio Committee and was initially approved in June, but has now been sort of called on, voted on. The ANC, GUD, NCC, PA, and Al Jamaha voted against. The DA, ACDP, and Freedom Front Plus voted in favor. The city says that, you know, if national government resists, they will take the matter to court to try and get it through in that way. But, John, I mean, this is something that I think we support. We think that devolving police powers is definitely not even close to the beginning of a silver bullet for our problems. There are many problems with the cops that need a lot more work than just devolving powers. And, in fact, you know, in a place like Mpumalanga, devolving police powers is probably not going to make much of a difference. But it is a start. It is part of the answer to fixing the police service. What do you make of the story?
Yeah, I agree that I think it's a good move by the city of Cape Town, and I hope it succeeds. I'm sure there will be lots of pushback from the ANC and from central government that doesn't really want to let go of these powers. But we like this idea of subsidiarity, of decisions being made close to the place where they have the biggest impact. And this change would reflect that better than the current setup. We've also heard repeated complaints from the Western Cape that it's being under-resourced in terms of policing powers and is therefore hamstrung in its ability to address criminality, especially in the poorer areas, which really need a beefing up of police to help reduce gang violence and murders specifically. The upshot, I think, is that as the ANC weakens, it will become harder and harder for it to assert central control over the rest of the country. That's probably a good thing. I see that we had one of our viewers earlier ask also, does the country divide? Tricky question. I'm not that gung-ho on that idea. I do think the country sticks together. But if it divides, maybe it divides mainly in KwaZulu-Natal. So this is sort of a kind of sidetrack to explore what happens if MK can't get the ANC or doesn't want the ANC, then maybe its best option is actually to try to dominate KZN per se as a province, be in charge there. And then maybe we do see a kind of division of the country. Other than that, I don't think it's very likely. But apart from that, devolution, I think, is a good idea. We should see more of it. If we had a choice, we would. Nick.
Yeah, I think the whole division thing is overblown. I do think that it's kind of difficult actually in part just because any sort of attempt to an independent state for any of these, any of the provinces or sections of the country would probably be doomed to failure. I think, you know, South Africa has been pretty integrated for how old is the country? 115 years or so now. You know, we don't actually, you know, people move around quite a bit. People, we have sort of good transport links between all the parts and things. But that, you know, not getting bogged down on that, I think this is definitely the right way. The reason I singled out Mpumalanga for a place where I don't think devolution will particularly work in the short term, at least, is that, you know, I fear that a place like Mpumalanga, you probably have the police forces have been infiltrated quite a lot by criminal elements and such. And in fact, it may even in the short term, I think, make things a little bit worse because you won't have some sort of national pushback on various abuses. But as you said, you know, there's a sort of, there's a stronger link of accountability when you devolve power, because, you know, you can sort of tailor the policies and actions you take more closely to your environment, and the people know, you know, people in Mpumalanga will know, okay, this isn't some sort of vast national government thing that's very far away from us, and we know you have to change the whole country's government in order to change the police in our province. No, actually, we just need to change the people in our province, and I think that does start to begin to change the problem. But obviously, you need to do a lot more with the cops. You know, you need to improve morale. You need to, you know, hold people to higher standards. You need to enforce very strict meritocracy. You need to fire non-performers, etc. Yes, what shall we move on to the next topic? Another opinion piece. So Tom Eaton wrote a piece called "Why the Zillification of Joburg is Mission Impossible." So in his opinion piece, Tom Eaton starts off by saying Johannesburg might be unwinnable for the DA for the DA, because what it's selling, a functioning bureaucracy, is irrelevant to many voters and downright threatening to others. Okay. Many of, talking about Zilla, many have heard Myra's remembering how she picked up Cape Town by the scruff of its neck and shook it into shape in the 2000s, believe she is the only politician in the country with the skill, determination, and rhino-like skin to save Johannesburg. And anybody who disagrees is clearly a corrupt ANC stool pigeon. To her detractors, Helen Zilla is a tone-deaf throwback, at best a 74-year-old pensioner who is out of touch with an urban population that is the youngest of any city in the country, and at worst a defender of colonialism who just last week reminisced in the Sunday Times about her carefree childhood in Rivonia, where she could jump on bikes to ride wherever she wanted to go, even as black South Africans had their movements restricted by the police state dedicated to propping up white supremacy. Eden goes on to say that he thinks that the DA is not particularly serious, hasn't been serious about winning Joburg, because he says here, quote, instead, Johannesburg might be unwinnable for the DA because what it's selling, a functioning bureaucracy, is irrelevant to many voters and downright threatening to others. I've written before about the transience of Joburg, how it's a city full of people who want to live there but don't want to be buried there, a place you go to make money and friends and memories, but not somewhere you necessarily put down roots. We don't know how deep the rot goes in the City of Gold, but urban collapse is fantastically lucrative. Just think of the water tank tenders. And it's safe to assume that there is an entire parallel economy in the city, the existence of which depends on bad governance. This is a generalization, of course. There are still thousands of families in the city who have been there for generations and who intend to be there for generations more. There are also many thousands whose poverty means they don't have a choice in the matter. But the fact remains, among all South African cities, Joburg has by far the largest demographic of young, upwardly mobile people whose plans don't feature a home in the city 30 years from now, and who, as Joburg's reputation and prognosis get worse and worse, become even less likely to see it as a good place to settle. It's possible, in other words, that Joburg has a great proportion of voters who have no emotional stake in the city's long-term future and therefore have no strong personal interest in the DA's only substantial political offering. John, I think this is a really bad argument. firstly, I think that, you know, while obviously there is something to the fact that a lot of people move to Joburg and that it is a place for making money, and then people view, they either want to go to, you know, when they're retirement, they want to maybe go back to the area their family is traditionally from, or they maybe want to move to the coast. And, you know, if they've made a lot of money and have a nice house on, you know, the south coast or something like that. But the idea that, like, people don't have a sort of emotional attachment to Joburg, that you know, this is just a completely a city of transients, I think is just kind of crazy. The vast majority of people who live in Joburg will probably die there. And that'll be by choice, not just by circumstance.
I was going to say, they will die here sooner rather than later, given the crime rate.
Yeah, no, I'm a weird exception. I lived in Joburg for 31 years until suddenly I moved to Cape Town. But, yeah. You know, I think I'm very much the sort of exception rather than the rule. And if the city worked better, I may never have left in the first place. So put in more generous terms, it's almost as though Tom Eaton is arguing here that young people don't want a functioning city, which I think is kind of wild, because, I mean, one thing we do know that young people want is jobs and economic opportunities. And a city which is collapsing around them is not one that's going to provide those things. What do you make of this piece?
Yeah, I think that maybe Tom Eaton's Capetonian biases are showing against us Johannesburgers. And as somebody who sort of really likes Johannesburg, I disagree with his argument. I think there's plenty of people who live here, who's, you know, maybe their families are from here, and who certainly do see this as a place that they want to call home, that they want, you know, generations of their family to live in. But as you say, what makes it tricky is the bad state of the city. You know, the governance is poor, city economy is not doing so well, and that makes Johannesburgers very upset. You know, we do actually want the city to be well run because we want to live here. We are frustrated by the fact that it's not been well run for the past however many years. And I think that's why many Johannesburgers are enthusiastic about the prospect of Helen Zille coming in. Maybe some overblown expectations also on our parts, you know, that she'll wave a magic wand and turn everything into humming efficiency overnight. We know that's not going to happen, but nonetheless, our best chance.
As for his claim that the city is unwinnable for the DA, I don't really think... Look, I wrote an opinion piece saying that it might be unwinnable for the DA, that it could just be bit too far.
Yes.
But I also said might. That was kind of the point, is that, you know, we don't really know, and this might actually turn out to be a brilliant stroke of going for the big win, which is the point of what I was arguing. So, you know... There's also this kind of, I mean, there's two other things that have sort of come out of this. You know, am I being uncharitable to sort of almost be that there's an inference here that the poor don't care about a functioning bureaucracy? I think the poor care about a functioning bureaucracy more than the wealthy, because they don't have alternatives. If you're poor, you have to deal with government in a far more sort of brutal and necessary way than people in the middle class or the wealthy have to deal with it. And so, you know, when government doesn't work and you're poor, it's a really big deal. Now, you know, that doesn't always mean you're going to vote for the party that has the best reputation of good governance, because people make voting choices based off of, you know, 1,000 things that are going on. But I think that that's also kind of a silly argument. And the last kind of thing I want to just say on that is there's also this sort of strange sort of idea that, you know, the I don't know what to call them, the criminals, the mafias, the dodgy ones, will be able to sort of swing the election in their favor because they are profiting so much from the city. Well, you know, I think our next municipal elections probably will be free and fair. And unless there's water tanker mafias going around beating up people at voting stations, I don't really think that's going to play. Unless, you know, Eaton thinks that 30% of the city is benefiting from all the corruption, which I don't think is true. What's your take on those thoughts?
Like, I think at heart his argument is right. So in the sense that, sure, there's lots of people who are getting rich off corruption in Johannesburg, but that's, I think, not going to stop voters from voting to get rid of that, as you point out. You know, that's not the thing that most city residents want. The ones benefiting are a small minority. They don't hold the majority of the votes. So yeah, I think you know, Tom Eaton's a very good writer, very entertaining, lots of fun to read. But I think his arguments in this case fall flat.
Yeah, no, I think so. I think you know, the sort of, if Zille putting her hat in to be mayor of Joburg is actually one of the best sort of strategic plays the DA has played in a long time. You know, the costs, if she doesn't win, then she could be like, well, I tried. And then it's sort of like a nice kind of, you know, she's, you know, older, and it's not, she's kind of towards the end of her career. So it can be like, well, it's not a huge deal. You're not like crushing the opportunities of some young and upcoming leader, but then she's also got the experience. So I just think that this is, he also describes the debate around whether, you know, Zilla will be the candidate or would be good for the city or not as being far more full of heat rather than light. And it just being lots of people shouting each other on social media. I mean, obviously that's true because, you know, people on social media just scream at each other all the time. But I actually don't entirely agree. In fact, I think that there's a lot of people who you wouldn't really expect to back Zilla kind of backing her tentatively so far. And that there has been a little bit more of a discussion of, you know, what do we actually want from our city government? In fact, I would say that we've had one of the more mature discussions this far out. About how the city is to be governed. Any more thoughts on this before we close up for today?
May you live in interesting times, I think is the watchword of the day and probably also of the next few years. So yeah, stay tuned. Lots of unexpected things are still going to happen and tax our ability to understand what's going on and what will happen next.
Yeah, no, I think that's very much the case. Anyway, I would like to leave our listeners with a feeling of hope and goodwill going into the weekend. I do think that a poison in South Africa is that we can be doomed to fatalism. I think all of us from time to time kind of feel like it's all sort of hopeless. But I think it's a quote from Jan Smuts that South Africa is a place where the best never happens, the worst never happens. Now, we can argue here or there about whether that's true or not, but I think there is something to that we have had a remarkable history of managing to avoid total calamity from time to time. So I think we're probably going to pull that off again. And I think that being fatalist, in fact, is a self-fulfilling prophecy. It dooms you to ending up in a situation of badness.
I'll add one more thing to that, if I may, Nicholas, which is the notion that we're entering a time of much more contestation of ideas than we've had previously. And I think that's a good thing, you know, for somebody of a liberal bent who wants the contest of ideas to play out. That's probably what we're going to get. We won't have a single party like the NP dominating everything or the ANC dominating everything and their mistakes affecting everyone. We'll have debates, arguments, you know, we'll be fighting lots. As long as you fight with words, that's okay. We just have must sure we don't fight with weapons, preferably.
Yeah, no, exactly. And with that, we'll call it to a close. Thank you, everyone, and have a wonderful, lovely, and relaxing weekend. Cheers, everyone.